Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today on this 11th anniversary of 9/11, we will begin with Colleen Rowley, a former FBI special agent who pushed to investigate the so-called 13th 9/11 hijacker, Zacharias Moussaoui, before the 9/11 attack. We will discuss the latest revelations of a hidden body of memos and intelligence briefs that preceded the infamous August 9th CIA Delhi brief, Bin Laden determined to strike in US, that makes it clear how culpable the Bush White House was for not preventing 9/11 and how negligent they were in ignoring repeated specific warnings. Then we go to Moscow to speak with the editor of a popular science magazine who was fired for not covering Putin's stunt flying with the cranes. Marcia Gessen, the author of The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin, joins us to discuss the ongoing struggle of brave Russians standing up to an increasingly repressive leader who continues to dramatically reverse freedom of expression and the legal, civil, and human rights of Russians. Then finally, we'll examine the latest attempt by the Wall Street banking lobby to undo the Dodd-Frank post-2008 reforms. Amit Narang, public citizens regulatory policy advocate and editor of the Administrative Law Review, joins us to discuss how a bipartisan group of senators are pushing a poison pill bill posing as financial reform that will enable Wall Street to smother attempts at oversight with endless delays through litigation. Joining us now on the 11th anniversary of 9/11 is Colleen Rowley, a former FBI special agent who investigated Italian organized crime and Sicilian heroin smuggling, then in 1990 was transferred to Minneapolis, where she pushed to investigate the so-called 13th 9/11 hijacker, Zacharias Moussaoui. In 2002, she brought some of the pre-9/11 lapses to light and testified to the Senate Judiciary Committee about endemic problems facing the FBI and the intelligence community. Time magazine named her and two others whistleblowers persons of the year. She retired from the FBI in 2004 and now speaks publicly on ethical decision-making and balancing civil liberties with the need for effective investigation. Welcome to Background Briefing, Colleen Rowley.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I've always been puzzled by the extent to which those high up in our government who were given information about an impending attack, specifically the president, the vice president, the National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, the head of the FBI, Louis Freeh, and others who were given information that an attack was impending and for various reasons ignored these attacks. Now, Kurt Eichenwald has written a book and has an article in the New York Times, The Deafness Before the Storm, that indicates that the famous August the 6th, 2001 memo titled Bin Laden Determined to Strike in the U.S. is only the tip of the iceberg, that preceding memos in the president's CIA daily briefing were far more specific and far more alarming. And so the body of evidence is great out there that's previously been kept under wraps by the Bush White House of their culpability in ignoring these threats.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that it's taken 11 years for the truth, snippets of the truth at least, to slowly dribble out. Last year, there was actually other revelations that came out on the 10th anniversary about memos that afterwards officials claimed never to have even read, that were of the same nature, that basically there was one memo in the FBI that said Bin Laden and Ibn Khattab are determined to attack, very similar to what Eichenwald is referring to in these later summer memos.
So did the White House just selectively... And they did it under pressure from the 9/11 Commission to release this August the 6th intelligence briefing warning, Bin Laden determined to strike the U.S. I guess that's ended up being damage control, right, for them. And then they managed to successfully keep the rest of the memos that preceded it, which are far more alarming and much more specific, from the public.
They fought the truth coming out tooth and nail. And at the same time as they were fighting the truth of basically these were such simple, Eichenwald calls it negligence, but I think it's more like recklessness. This was reckless ignoring of warnings that were coming out, and it was more than one thing. It was coming from every direction. The stuff that came in that summer of 9/11 that we now know about is just mind-boggling. And from the top down, yes, there was little interest on the part of the Bush administration. You've seen this You've seen this actually been revealed now slowly, but, you know, Condi Rice puts off Richard Clark. Ashcroft lists terrorism as his lowest priority in August of 2001, telling the FBI that they've got a ratchet up violent crime program. So you've seen this, and of course, the Bush administration, this is interesting that these other memos existed, and Eichenwald is quoting from these earlier summer memos, and perhaps, I don't know if there will be any public pressure at this point to produce those actual memos. Let's hope that the press can get some pressure on, but, you know, frankly, the public, after what, how many wars, 2-3 wars, the creation of a police national security surveillance state, overturning the Geneva Conventions, I mean, all of the various things that the Bush administration told the public was the answer to 9/11 without telling the public what the truth of their own terrible recklessness was in ignoring this. That, of course, now is almost water under the bridge at 11 years, and people don't really know how to handle the truth. I think there's a problem now with so many terrible actions, false solutions that occurred after 9/11, that people are in a way vested in this false myth. So I hope that we can get the truth out, and obviously it will slowly come out, but it's been a very sad episode to live through.
And again, I'm speaking with Colleen Rowley, former FBI special agent who pushed to investigate the so-called 13th 9/11 hijacker, Zacharias Moussaoui. And
well, let me just stop. It was the agents in our Minneapolis office. We had a couple of extremely astute agents, one who was a pilot and actually was in intelligence, and he had a very few years in. That's why people didn't necessarily take their information seriously either, but the agents were the ones. I was just the legal person in the office. I was the legal counsel. And afterwards, the Bush administration, top down, used the legal reasoning as a pretext. They claimed that the law did not allow them to adeptly investigate terrorism. And of course, that's one of the reasons why you've seen the warrantless monitoring. All of these illegal actions are part of this idea that the law was a constraint. And it never was. It never was. It was completely false. But my memo was mostly on that level, how these were simply human errors, mostly failure to read documents. It's incredible that the Inspector General and the Joint Intelligence Committee, and as shoddy as it was, even the 9/11 Commission, recognized that simple reading of these key memos. Afterwards, these officials claim they never read these memos. Even that of sharing information between the CIA and the FBI would have stopped 9/11. And certainly if the Bush administration had indicated any serious concern about these terrible warnings that bin Laden was determined to attack, none of this would have happened. But because the public and the citizenry was not allowed to know what the true mistakes and failures were, and what was all covered up, the 9/11 Commission, after 3 years, did put out a part of this, but very small. They were not able to get at the truth either, partly because the Bush administration fought them. But now, of course, the sad thing is that, like I said, all of these false solutions were immediately put into play. You start to see, for instance, Cheney talking about using torture within weeks. You start to hear them saying, or within, I think, just a few days, they're talking about going into Iraq, which had nothing to do with 9/11. So you see all of these very, very false solutions to 9/11 being undertaken within days and weeks of 9/11, and the public had no idea what was going on.
Well, apparently, Colleen Rowley, from intelligence officials, that we've now learning that it was the neoconservative leaders who had recently assumed power at the Pentagon. They had got the president's ears and were warning the White House that the CIA had been fooled and that bin Laden was merely pretending to be planning an attack to distract the administration from Saddam Hussein, who, of course, was the real target of the neoconservatives. And eventually, they obviously were able to convince Bush to go to war against a secularist who, in the real world, would never have had anything to do with an Islamic fundamentalist.
Well, and in fact, he was kind of an enemy of the 9/11 of Osama bin Laden. So, in fact, what we did was created by taking down Saddam Hussein, and of course, stirring up all the trouble. People used to say you were going to be hitting a hornet's nest in the Mideast. Now that actually has backfired. There are actually al-Qaeda new groups that are at least affiliated with al-Qaeda that are working in some of these Syria and other uprisings right now. So, and especially with the drone bombing in Afghanistan and Pakistan, there are many experts that now say al-Qaeda is on the rise. So, you know, 11 years later, the longest wars, I think, in our history at least, and to see this kind of constant incompetence and worse than incompetence, it's all through deceit. I blame it all on lack of information sharing and secrecy, because if the public and if key officials in the intelligence committees knew the truth, none of this would have happened. And frankly, even now, we could still stop some of the dumbest things that are going on. But there's a lot of secrecy, and it's just the opposite of what the fix is. If you realize that the failure to connect the dots was due to agencies not sharing information with each other, and Eichenwald, I think, is perfectly right about this. These neocons wanted to control, and they were some key positions that they had their theories, of course, completely wrong, but they had their pre-agenda in mind. And so when facts come along that are different from their previous agenda that they want to put into place, they just ignore those facts. And so the answer would be less secrecy. And I don't think the Obama administration, frankly, understands that either. They've actually increased secrecy and prosecuted whistleblowers and the like, too. A lot of this is just because they think they should be able to control what the public knows. But this is absolutely dangerous, what we're doing, continuing to do.
Again, I'm speaking with Colleen Rowley, a former FBI special agent who in 2002 brought some of the pre-9/11 lapses to light and testified to the Senate Judiciary Committee about endemic problems facing the FBI and the intelligence community. And we're talking about some of the latest information that's come from Kurt Eichenwald's research indicating that there were many, many more and much more damning and alarming memos and intelligence briefs that the White House had about an impending attack by bin Laden, and even specifically saying that the terrorist groups were actually in the United States planning an operation and that the al-Qaeda strike would be imminent. All of this was ignored by the White House. And obviously, one of the things that I find sort of ironic and somewhat infuriating, Colleen, is that the 9/11 truthers have muddied the water here with all of their absurd theories, and they've essentially let Bush and Cheney and Condoleezza Rice and Louis Freeh off the hook by suggesting that somehow they were all evil geniuses who wanted bin Laden to attack in order to rescue their failed presidency, when in fact the real story is clear that these people have gotten away with the worst negligence in American history, and they should be absolutely pilloried for their incompetence. That is their primary job of a president and an executive branch, is to protect the United States. That's their number one mission, and they failed.
Yeah, well, I totally agree. When you say the word truther, what I agree with is that the full truth, yes, some has dribbled out over the last 11 years. But I do agree that the full truth has yet to still come out because, for instance, there's been a big black area between why the CIA, they've never been allowed to tell the truth. The CIA was tracking two of the terrorist suspects for, I think, over a year, and they knew they had come into California. And yet, to this day, we don't know why the CIA never told the FBI about that. We don't know, for instance, George Tenet, who was one of the key hubs and did read these memos and did all of the memos that Eichenwald is writing about. Obviously, George Tenet knew about these things. George Tenet was told in mid-August that a terrorist suspect was trying to learn how to fly a jet airliner. And he was concerned enough that this was turned into a PowerPoint for internal purposes in the CIA. But when Tenet's asked, why didn't he do anything? Now, you have to consider this is in the context of all of those prior intelligence warnings. He just shrugs. So we never even got an answer from probably the person you would think is the most knowledgeable in this whole area. Maybe his answer was because the Bush administration didn't care. Maybe what is his truthful answer? Maybe his answer would have been because there were key neoconservatives who were planning something else and they didn't care. That's possible. But he's never been pushed to tell the truth of why he did nothing when he knew a terrorist suspect was already in custody in Minnesota learning to fly, and this is in the context of all of those prior warnings. That's incredible. So to the extent that the full truth has yet to come out, I agree. I don't have any evidence myself, of course, about and this is, of course, I'm in Minnesota, but I have no evidence, solid evidence, about planting of bombs in the World Trade Center or anything like that. None of this is ever came to my attention, what they would call a smoking gun. So when people talk about conspiracy theories and whatever, I think that we need to always look for solid evidence. And, this documentation that Eichenwald is talking about is solid evidence, and it's out there. And let's hope the public and the press now use some pressure to have these see the light of day.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious, isn't it, Colleen Rowley, that in the absence of the full truth, it's led to this kind of fevered speculation that borders on a kind of a cult. And the truth of the matter is that, I mean, I don't know whether it is the truth of the matter, but my assumption is that what Tenet and all of these people are doing, and particularly Bush and Cheney, is that they and Rice, Condoleezza Rice, who's something of a hero in Republican circles, they're essentially protecting their legacy by keeping this stuff under wraps, that it's not a question that they in any way let this happen, which is the main kind of truth of speculation. It seems much more likely that they are in fact getting a free pass and covering up their incompetence.
Well, I don't think they'll get a free pass forever. The truth does eventually, and history shows, does eventually come out. It's actually amazing to think that it wouldn't come out. I mean, if you were Condi, for instance, back in September when she would make these stupid statements, no one would ever think that a person would fly a plane into a building. I can't even imagine how her head could have been working, because she herself was involved in planning to prevent planes from flying into locations. If she was that dumb and she knew nothing of the history, then she should not have been a national security advisor. And yet she made those statements. If you think about the way deceit works with politicians, of course, another terrible example has nothing to do with this, but, you know, when Clinton slams his fist down and says, I did not have sex with that woman, and yet he has to really know that there must be some hard DNA evidence out there that would refute him. And of course, when that happens, the public completely loses its trust in our public officials' statements. So I think the truth will come out slowly. And I don't think that a lot of the speculation that gets too specific into theories, for instance, the theories about planting bombs and that type of thing, are helpful at all. I think that as an investigator, you've got to keep an open mind, and you have to look at what we really know. These warnings that came in that summer that were completely ignored for all different reasons, or claimed that they were never even read, sometimes even covered up. The Sybelle Edmonds book, Classified Woman, has some examples of translations in the FBI that were supposed to have gone to high-level officials that looked like they were simply covered up. And they were warnings, very specific warnings about bin Laden going to attack. So when you see the sum of all this evidence, as I think history will, I think the truth will eventually come out. And their legacy, I really would have a hard time believing that they're going to be able to maintain a sterling legacy in the face of what will be known.
Well, Colleen Riley, you served in the United States Embassy in Paris, France, as a FBI attaché, and I don't know whether it was the time when the Algerian terrorist group, the GIA, were caught by French intelligence planning to fly a passenger jet into the Eiffel Tower. But all this information preceded 9/11.
Yes, and the documents that were found about the, I think it was called the Bojinka plot, that involved Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's nephew, that was to fly a plane into the CIA. So again, and there are even, besides all of those specific plots, there had been instances of air safety instances where even people, mentally handicapped people, had tried to reach the cockpit. So for different reasons, just because they were deranged or whatever, there had been a fight inside a cockpit where they were wounded the pilot severely. And so now you can go back to FAA. My co-author, Bogdan Jakovic, who was part of the red team testing security at airports, had found the year before 9/11, that the security was terrible and that they could easily smuggle in weapons and especially with the Boston airport. And he had tried to make warnings about fixing security, and those were ignored. Again, they were different people, and there are different levels of people, but not everything goes all the way up to the Bush administration. But from the top down, a nonchalance and not caring attitude about this thing definitely had to come downwards as well. And the person at the top is the person who can order extra precautions, can order extra information sharing. Even if there had been communications from the Bush administration that people should be on the lookout for more warnings. Just imagine all the warnings we've gotten since 9/11. I mean, most of them might have been silly, the orange alerts, et cetera. But if there had even been a little bit of a concern from the top down, you know, these FBI officials who claim they never read the April 2001 memo, they probably would have read it because they would have been more conscientious, because they would have known that their bosses and superiors were concerned about this. And so, yes, a system works because of the top down is a big factor. And of course, it's even worse than realizing that 9/11 could have prevented if people had been more concerned and if people had taken the right precautions, et cetera. It's 11 years later. It's 11 years later, and these lessons have still not been learned. I don't believe that there still is the type of information sharing. In fact, secrecy from the public is at its apex. The Obama administration has actually, continued the secrecy. 92 million documents were classified last year, and now they're more worried about leaking, and they're giving thousands of polygraphs to analysts in the Pentagon. So all of what they're doing now is actually going back to the same environment of 9/11, risk-averse, not only risk-averse, but even averse to sharing of information with people.
Well, just in closing then, Colleen Rowley, it's pretty obvious that in the summer of 2001, particularly at the CIA, in the counterterrorism center at the CIA, the agents were quite apoplectic, and they kept sending these briefs to the White House warning about how an attack was imminent. And you also had on the FBI side, of course, John O'Neill, who was apparently one of the best agents that the FBI ever had, to my understanding. And he apparently really knew al-Qaeda and had the institutional knowledge, and he had butted heads with Louis Free, who was apparently, again, in that kind of complacent Bush mindset. Eventually, ironically, John O'Neill resigned from the FBI, was forced out, and ended up as head of security at the World Trade Center, and he died on 9/11. So not only do we not know the full story and that they're covering up an enormous amount of information, the stories within these stories themselves are so dramatic and tragic. And one, you know, wishes that some of those stories could get told, particularly the John O'Neill story.
Yeah, there were many good agents at lower levels. O'Neill was kind of a higher mid-level, but there were many agents. I mentioned the two in Minnesota, but there was a CIA female who passed this information on, made sure Tenet knew about it, etc. There were good people at the bottom, but they only were compartmentalized in what they knew. None of them knew the whole thing because information is supposed to flow up. And so somebody like a George Tenet is the one who really probably was privy to most of it. And so these good agents, a lot of times when they tried to get the truth out afterwards, were punished or forced to resign or retire. Not only John O'Neill before 9/11, but there were others. That story about why the CIA never told the truth to the FBI, there's an agent in there that was forced to resign. I don't know if there weren't other things involved, but I know that there's another agent in there in that story who was forced to resign. Meanwhile, the lower levels, the whistleblowers, were punished for telling the truth, still are being punished under the Obama administration, by the way. And the highest levels, the ones who did these terrible things, and let's use George Tenet, who went along with everything and gave false presentations and covered up. He goes on to write a book for $4 million, and he's teaching at Georgetown. And so Condi Rice is teaching at Stanford. The authors of the torture memos are law professors out there. I mean, you can go on and on, but if you went along with this really bad, deceitful system, you were rewarded and you were given promotions. If you balked about it, told the truth, you were punished or retaliated against. And that's one of the key fixes that Obama promised before he became president. He knew that, and he was insistent that whistleblowers would not be punished. And he thought it was a good thing for the public to learn the truth. He gave speeches like this. And of course, when the shoe's on the other foot, 3 years later, he's turned almost into the opposite. He's prosecuting whistleblowers. He's ordered polygraphs for the Pentagon. They're doing all this tracking of leaking, and it's a terrible situation to watch happen, because none of these solutions, most of them are pretty easy solutions as opposed to launching wars, etc., have, as far as I can see, have not even been 11 years later put into place.
Well, Colleen Rowley, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Yes, thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Colleen Rowley, a former FBI special agent who investigated Italian organized crime and Sicilian heroin smuggling. And then in 1990, she was transferred to Minneapolis. And along with other agents there, she pushed to investigate the so-called 13th 9/11 hijacker, Zacharias Moussaoui. And in 2002, she brought some of the pre-9/11 lapses to light and testified to the Senate Judiciary Committee about endemic problems facing the FBI and the intelligence community. Time magazine named her and two other whistleblowers Persons of the Year. She retired from the FBI in 2004 and now speaks publicly on ethical decision-making and balancing civil liberties with the need for effective investigation. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back and go to Moscow to talk to an editor of a magazine who got fired for not covering Putin's flight with the cranes.
Bye.